Rat.
Rose.
No.
Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome back to Warp Trails. This is the RetroZap Podcast Network show devoted to Star Trek. I'm your host, Dennis Keithley, and with me, as always, is my wife, co-host, and most favorite Star Trek fan, Beth.
We've missed you. Welcome to Season 4 of Discovery.
Yeah, apologies, everybody, but we've been traveling and dealing with a little bit of illness in the household, so we're behind on getting these out, but we're going to catch up here, and bear with us, and hopefully in a week or so we'll be all caught up. But as we were just saying, yeah, this is the season premiere of episode 4 of Discovery, Kobayashi Maru. This episode was written by Brian Fuller and Alex Kurtzman, directed by Olatunde Usunsanmi. And this will be a full spoiler discussion. I'll give you a brief overall summary of the episode. Captain Burnham and Booker are on a diplomatic mission to a world formerly of the Federation. Things do not go well, and they narrowly escape with their lives, but manage to make a delivery of dilithium as a peace offering. Meanwhile, Saru is on his home planet of Kaminar and is treated as a respected elder. There, he encourages his fellow Kelpians to look outward to the galaxy and not practice isolationism. Sakaal then encourages Saru to return to Starfleet instead of worrying about him and remaining there on the planet. After dedication ceremony for the reopening of Starfleet Academy, Admiral Vance sends Discovery to investigate a Starfleet space station that has sent a distress call. When they arrive at the appropriate system, the station is spinning out of control after an impact with a strange gravimetric force. Burnham and Discovery's crew rescue the station's crew, but the station's commander dies in the process. Booker then arrives back at Discovery after a coming of age ceremony for his nephew on Kwajan, only to discover the planet has been hit by a similar gravitational force and has been devastated. So I left a number of details out that we'll get to over the course of the discussion. But Beth, what did you think about the season premiere?
So I really, there were a couple of bits, especially with the reopening of Starfleet Academy, that I remembered how much I really missed this cast, this crew, this ship, however you want to describe it. The opening with the diplomatic mission was wonderful. I enjoyed that immensely. There were lines like, why is there always a cliff? Mm-hmm. Which I found very amusing. But a lot of the main characters were alone or sort of underutilized in here. And, you know, the season premiere is all about setting things up, and things were set up, and I'm interested about how things were set up. But I didn't love this episode. I liked a lot of things about this episode. I had a lot of questions that came from the episode. For example, if Starfleet Academy hasn't been opened since the burn, where are the Starfleets coming from? So where are the Federation officers who are on the ship?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that an important thing for me to know? No, but I want to know it. What about you?
I liked it quite a bit. The style of this episode reminded me quite a bit of the first two Abrams Star Trek movies, especially Into Darkness, with that beginning that they had there, and you know, the volcano and various cliffs and things that were involved there. I thought it was a fun episode. I think it was more streamlined than I'm used to for a beginning of a season for Star Trek Discovery. They gave us a good episode. To your point about kind of isolating some of the characters and not getting as much of them, they really did lean into Michael as the central character of this episode, which on the one hand, I think is fine because they really set up what this season seems to be about, at least one aspect of it, which is her growing into the role of captain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll get to the end here in a minute, but this whole being willing to put others in the line of danger, not necessarily risking herself or risking everything for one, you know, the needs of the many and the need, you know, outweigh the needs of the few, that classic Star Trek theme that we've got going on there. So, but let's just talk about the beginning a little bit. That was just fun dealing with the, they didn't even name these aliens, but they're white skinned. They are humanoid, but they have this relationship with butterflies that form their wings. And they don't get metaphor. They don't understand the real concept of what a pet is. And they make a reference to Grudge on Book's ship that, you know, she's a queen. And these aliens immediately think that they've taken a queen hostage and that they're going to make them pets as well. I just thought it was a fun beginning where diplomacy breaks down over fundamental misunderstandings.
That, and I also thought that I really, as much as I like the Federation, right? I'm a lifelong Star Trek fan, so, you know, the Federation is good. The idea that there is an alien planet or just a planet, and there's a group of people who are like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I'm good post-burn, don't really need the Federation, kind of am aware that the Federation was what broke the galaxy anyway. I'm good. Y'all mm-hmm. can go. And that, you know, no matter how, and I know in the end, you know, of course it all works out, because although it's not like they joined the Federation, they just were like, okay, thanks for the dilithium, you aren't the jerks we thought you were.
But to that point,
but I like that position of, yeah, I don't really trust you and I don't need you, and cool.
They're very suspicious in this regard because of past dealings with the Federation, and there was nothing that Michael and Book were going to do on that mission to repair all the past grievances they might have had. It was a good first step that Michael came up with, which was the Stamets and Adira figured out that the planet's magnetic pole had shifted, which had thrown off the internal chemistry of these aliens, so they weren't able to fly straight. And the dilithium that was powering all their satellites that helped them compensate for that had gone bad in the burn. So when they repaired that, that helped out the aliens. And so it was a nice olive branch.
So they could shoot and aim better at Michael and Booker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, say what you want about it. I thought it was a fun beginning of this. It was a neat introduction. And
oh no, I enjoyed it. Like I said, it was I think it was my favorite part.
Mm-hmm. And I do like the chemistry between Michael and Booker.
Oh my gosh, it
continues to shine in this season after doing so well in the last season. All right, well, let's shift the discussion to Saru for a little bit, and he's on Kaminar, and they're trying to figure out that would be the Kelpians. As an aside, it was really cool that the predators that used to devour the Kelpians.
Yeah, the Bayou, then they were just cool there, like in the tanks. It had a very Aquaman-esque look to it, as they were just like floating in the, it was cool. I wish they had spoken or something, but it was very cool.
It did speak
cool.
A little bit in the background.
A little.
Yeah. But the point being is that they're no longer at odds. They coexist now on this planet. And so that was a neat development, you know, so many hundreds of years in the future, that it's very much a Star Trek theme that they were able to overcome those type of things. But regardless, the Kelpians are trying to decide what to do about rejoining the Federation and the likes there. And they're in the kind of this isolation mode. And then Saru gives a pretty cool speech about, you know, the local expanding to, you know, the areas around them on the planet, to the planet wide, to the solar system, to the galaxy, to the universe, and just showing them how big everything is and not to look so inward. And I also just thought it was, you know, neat. I mean, Saru's not really all that much older than anybody that's there on the planet, but because he's technically hundreds of years old,
he's kind of like the Captain America of Kelpie.
Yeah, he's got this honorific of honored elder. And then, of course, Sakaal is an issue. You know, the Kelpians are afraid that he could, in fact, create another burn, but in a neat little bit of not really exposition, they explain to us that can't happen because he's too far away from that planet. And he doesn't have that connection with that dilithium anymore. So another burn is virtually impossible.
And let me, because I say a lot of times about Star Trek that a line of dialogue could fix something. Okay, this is an example of a line of dialogue fixing something. Because this was one of my mysteries going in from season 3. Like, was Sakaal a threat? And the answer from like 2 lines of dialogue is no. And I'm like, okay, cool. We can move on now. And I want to call it out, because a lot of times I'm like, a line of dialogue would fix this. Here it is. Here's the line of dialogue that fixed it.
And it wasn't clunky. It fit into the episode. It was natural in the context. So they did a good job with that. I agree with you completely on that. So Michael is speaking at the rededication of Starfleet, as you were mentioning earlier, and we also meet the new Federation of, I'm sorry, the new president of the Federation, and that is Lara Rilak. Rilak, I think, is how you pronounce her last name. I believe she's half Cardassian, based and on part, the ridges.
And Bajoran. And
markings on her face, so that was an interesting development. She's far looking than the half Cardassian Bajoran that we got to see on Deep Space Nine. But the at any rate, so she's there, and they dedicate the new space dock, and they call it Archer Space Dock.
Yay!
So neat
Enterprise
little,
reference.
Yeah, neat little Enterprise reference there. And there is a casual reference about how the Federation, I may have got these numbers backwards, but it started off at 38 planets from season three, and it's now grown to 59, or it might have been 39 planets and it's grown to 58. I can't remember which one it was, but so the Federation has recovered some since Michael and the crew of Discovery solved the mystery of the burn. Things kind of go a little bit of a awry though, because Admiral Vance does get this distress call and he's going to send Discovery to investigate it because it's the only ship that can get there fast enough with the spore drive. And President Rilak insists on going with them. What did you think about that?
So I didn't think anything of it. I actually thought Michael was extra paranoid about this one. So the, you know, the president does this, I want to go, I want to check it out. And I'm like, okay. Weird, but sure. You know, you want to check out the cool spore drive. I mean, in theory, Discovery has been jumping all over the place, delivering dilithium, and hasn't really been around. And if you were the president and your Federation's growing because of this one ship, you probably want to spend some time on this one ship. Like, I didn't read anything into it. And then Burnham's like, she only wants to do it to prove that she's in action and check off the box. And I was like, okay, nothing in how this president has presented herself suggests that this is true. And in fact, when Michael was like, oh, it's the president, she's making it all about herself for the speech for the Academy, the president actually doesn't. I just, and again, first episode, we will probably spend more time with the president. You know,
oh, undoubtedly Michael, so, yeah.
Right. Michael will have her moments. There will be discussions. We will figure this all out. But I thought out of the box, Michael seemed a little paranoid, and I'm not sure why, but what did you think?
Well, I don't know about that paranoia. That's not what struck me. It's the simple fact that they're sending Discovery on a rescue mission and the president of the Federation is going with them. That would be like Joe Biden dropping onto an aircraft carrier to head over to the Persian Gulf for a rescue mission near Kuwait and Iraq. And that just, that seemed a little bizarre.
From that point of view, I totally agree that the president should not be there. And in fact, later in the episode, when the president was, or the president was like, Michael, maybe the captain shouldn't be going. I was like, excuse me, you're on this ship.
Yeah. Like,
maybe you shouldn't be here. Like, I'm not mad at you pulling a Riker on Michael, except for the hypocrisy of you doing it.
Yeah. I just don't think, I mean, fine, they needed her to be there for the overall story, but then she kind of interfered with the rescue mission. Now, she did provide some assistance that was helpful, but at the same time, I just don't think she should have been. If she really wanted to see what the capabilities of Discovery were and look at that spore drive, there were more appropriate moments for that.
There were better times to do it.
Yeah, not on a rescue mission that was urgent that right then. And she should have had other security around. They should have had other protocols in place for running the Federation in her absence. And none of that was taken care of.
And that may have been what, but see, I don't know. Now that you say that she didn't have any people around, maybe because Michael kept calling her a politician. I think if she had had that entourage, it would have been, I think I would have bought more into the idea of her just as a politician. But
so,
anywho.
Yeah, so they make their, they go to Black Alert, they make their jump with the spore drive, and they find the station spinning out of control. Summarizing a lot of what's going on here, it's been hit by this gravitational force, which has thrown it off of course, and they end up matching its rotation and its trajectory with some neat moves by Detmer. there.
How fun was that Dethmer and Owa just sort of like, I don't
know, talking?
Yeah, they were having their own conversation. I'm like, the president is right there and you two are just living your best lives. Like, mm-hmm. That was really, I really enjoyed the two of them just kind of like, in a very loving friend way.
So Stamets tells Michael that Adira's got what they need to fix the station, but there's no way that Michael's sending them over by themselves to the station. So Tilly goes as well. Did Tilly get promoted? I didn't catch that.
Tilly is promoted to lieutenant.
Okay. It's about time.
Almost everyone got, lots of people got promoted, which I thought was cool. And to your point, it was about time. Also, there was less than 20 new cadets coming into the academy and a whole lot of ships getting built. So yeah, they're going to need some people. Mm-hmm. But it was good. I always liked Tilly. It was good to see Tilly.
Right. So they head over to the station and it takes a fair amount of convincing. I wish I caught the commander of the station's name, but I did not. And the president has to intervene. She pulls the file on this commander and finds out stuff about his homeworld. And that's how she convinced them to accept the help and accept, you know, that Discovery's offering. And so they're starting to make progress, but then there is this small asteroid field that moves into the area that throws everything into danger. They can't beam them off of the station. They have to give up the station because there's no way to repair it. And so they're going to use this pod. The only problem is the pod gets jammed by debris from the asteroid field. So to that point you're making earlier, Michael's going to take that little EVA pod, because she's the most qualified person on the ship to do it, and go clear the debris. And naturally, the debris hits the pod. And so she has to evac from that in her suit and clear that out as well. So, yeah, I really like the episode, but to me, it was just like, there's a lot of questionable choices going on here, from the president to the captain of the ship and other things going on. And so they have to make two trips with the pod and before the shields give out on Discovery, and they can make their spore, you know, go to Black Alert, make their jump with the spore drive. And of course, this commander gets killed in the process, which leads to this whole conversation at the end about the Kobayashi Maru. And Rilik is going on about how Starfleet is creating new starships. There is a new kind of advanced space drive. And then they're also talking about potentially new spore drives and a new Voyager ship. And she's evaluating captains for this. And she's decided that Burnham is ill-equipped. And the idea of the Kobayashi Maru came up, you know, this classic test that Star Trek fans were familiar with, the no-win scenario. And the idea of the test is, how do you mitigate loss in this situation? And there is no winning this, but how do you mitigate the loss? And Burnham was not interested in mitigating the loss. She was trying the all or nothing approach here. And so what did you think about the conversation and the discussion of the Kobayashi Maru?
I thought, so in the beginning of the episode, Michael and Tilly have a conversation about how nice it must be to not live with space time, you know, with time shenanigans, mm-hmm. timeline shenanigans. I was like, this conversation seems to be coming out of nowhere. And then this conversation about the Kobayashi Maru takes place. And from the, again, kind of simplifying a lot of things, Michael is from the Kirk kind of school of captaincy in terms of the timeline. Not that every captain was like Kirk, but mm-hmm. and the idea of, you know, the cowboy diplomacy, to quote Spock on the subject. And the president is from I thought it was interesting because I understood why the timeline conversation happened, because Michael is a product of her time and the president is of her time. And the Kobayashi Maru the Kobayashi Maru test is 100% about mitigating loss. But that Michael would come from it the way she does, and that the president would come from the way she does, is, I think, as much about the personality of those two people, but also how sort of the evolution of the characters of from where they were and what they grew up with also influences that. What did you think of it?
Oh, I thought it was an interesting conversation. You're right, because Michael is very much in the Kirk mold as opposed to mm-hmm. a Picard mold, and who Picard seems to have a better grasp of the responsibility, Starfleet responsibility to the ship, and letting people do their jobs and not necessarily taking on all the risk yourself. You know, that's why Picard didn't typically go on the away team mission. And here, you know, Michael put herself in harm's way. Sure, she may have been the most qualified person for that EVA, but that was such a high degree of risk involved. The captain belongs on the bridge to command the rest of the mission. There's someone else who may not have been at quite her level. If she's a 100 on the AV pod, I'm certain there's someone else who was like a 95 or a 90 that could have done that. And I get the president's point. The thing is that they kind of set them up as antagonists. As we, as viewers of the show, are kind of naturally inclined to take or want to take Michael's side after watching mm-hmm. her for three seasons. But I think the captain made a good point, which is, You're the captain of Discovery, and you may be ideally suited for Discovery, but you need some experience in this position. And frankly, evaluating Michael to take over one of these brand new ships was probably not the best idea in the first place, because she just doesn't have the experience yet. She's still new in that role. I mean, let's think back to her history as the second officer at the beginning of the series, when she commits a mutiny and gets her captain killed and helps plunge the Federation into a war. And all the other mistakes that she's made along the way, she's earned the captain's chair, but she still needs a little bit of seasoning in that role. And I think, you know, I guess we have not yet seen episode 2 or 3 for that matter. We're a little behind. I'm guessing that's what part of the theme of this season. It's her getting that experience and realizing exactly what her roles and responsibilities are and having to make those tough choices when she doesn't want to. She's frequently going to be presented with the bad choice and the worst choice, and she's going to have to make that tough call, even though, you know, she might want to find that third option. It may just not be there.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, I don't know how much time occurs between, you know, the end of season 3 and the beginning of season 4. Obviously a few, if, you know, she's done enough diplomatic missions to get the Federation numbers up as high as they have. But the idea, I mean, but she hasn't been a captain for very long. And in terms of the normal progression of what a normal pre-burn Starfleet would have wanted from anyone, even with somebody as much potential and, you know, ability as Michael would have wanted from experience before making them captain, I mean, just has to be exponentially longer than how much experience Michael has. So I agree with you that, you know, that this idea that the president was looking at her for a new, you know, to move her to a different ship. I mean, yes, she's probably one of the most qualified captains, but in terms of how much experience anyone has, especially if there hasn't been a Starfleet Academy for 500 years, I mean, it's kind of like, well,
yeah, right.
I mean,
yeah, to be fair, if they really are talking about a new spore drive, she's the only captain that's got experience with a spore drive. And to your point, yeah, they haven't had an academy, so they've been getting their officers from somewhere, right? If they're just throwing them onto ships and then training them that way, or you, which you could do, the point of an academy is to get you experience in a safer environment and give you a little bit more in the classroom training and not just throwing you straight into the fire for all this. So yeah, there is that, but these ships that we've seen, I mean, they're completely different than anything that comes from Michael's era, let alone the Next Generation era and all these other things that we've seen that came after that. So mm-hmm. a big gap. It's a good episode. I like the discussion of the themes. I think it was an interesting plot simply because, you know, the president goes on this mission to evaluate Michael. Why is the president the one making these decisions? Shouldn't that have been Admiral Vance's role?
I mean, so this? That goes to a lot of the questions. I mean, I was like, you know, and again, first episode of the season. But, you know, the president knows, again, I know I'm fixating on No Starfleet Academy, but I'm fixating on No Starfleet Academy because, you know, before I knew there was a Hogwarts letter, I wanted to go to Starfleet Academy. Sure. But I'm like, okay, you're obsessed with the Kobayashi Maru, which is a Starfleet Academy test. So have you taken it? Like, you know about it. Yeah. How do you know about it?
Well, they set up an academy, so that must have been something they researched. But even then, how did you know you were going to even have that opportunity on this mission?
Yeah.
And she didn't. I mean, it may have been just a teachable moment when it came out, came down to it. But at the same point, it was a bad idea for the she's a newly elected president. Just as much as Michael's inexperienced in her role, Relic is likely some sort of lifelong politician. But she's also a brand new president. She's got a lot of learning to do in her role too. So I hope they explore that aspect of at least a little. I hope they don't focus on it the entire season, but I think that's something needs to be revisited.
Yeah, she and Vance butted heads before they got along. So
All right. Well, there's one last aspect of this episode we need to talk about.
Yes,
and that's
we
what goes on Quajon. So Book returns there for his nephew's coming of age ceremony. And he combines a little bit of blood with a little bit of sap from the tree, combines it and puts it into a pendant, which the kid wears around a necklace. And, you know, he says, you know, forget, you remember where you came from. You're part of this overall circle and this whole family. And then the kid asks Book, you know, where's yours? And good question. Book doesn't answer that. So that remains for another day. But then all the birds in the area just take off. Go ahead.
Sorry. Before the birds freak out, the kid runs off and it goes into slow mo, and the kid sort of turns around. Which was so anxiety ridden for me because I was like, I have watched enough television to know this is going to end badly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the birds started to go on. But like at this point, I felt like the creep factor was on 11.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that part of it, but yeah, it was bizarre when the birds just all took off, and they both knew it meant something because they have that empathic ability and they're in tune with nature and their planet. So Book goes to investigate it. He takes his ship up into the skies and he sees the birds just dead floating around. Mm-hmm. And then he gets hit by this gravitational anomaly and the ship goes into autopilot. It returns to the Federation. And then when they go to scan for Quajon, it's not where it's supposed to be. And when they find it, the planet is crumbling. It's been devastated there. So we've got our problem for the season, whatever is causing this gravitational anomaly there. I don't have any guesses. It doesn't remind me of anything that I've seen in Star Trek before. I see you shaking your head. So I'm assuming it's new to you as well. But
I mean, you know, weird anomalies, not new to either of us from Star Trek, but this specific type of destruction, gravitational disturbance thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's new to me.
Yeah. I'm curious how they're going to handle it because after you got past the first season of Discovery, the second season was all about beating control and so that it doesn't destroy all life in the galaxy. And then season three was them going into the future and figuring out how to resolve the issue with the burn. So you have these series are the seasons that deal with galactic wide consequences. And I mean, how many of these can one captain handle, I suppose, is what it comes down to. So I'm just curious what they're going to end up doing with that element of the season going forward. I'm not against it, but I was kind of hoping for not necessarily lower stakes, but not something that's necessarily going to be this season-long mystery type of thing. As much as I like the last season of it, Sukal is kind of a disappointment, is the big mystery. When everything was said and done, I was hoping for something a little bit more profound. And so I don't know what this is going to be. It could be anything, but we'll see where they go with it.
Yeah, I agree. I would have, and again, because I enjoyed the opening so much, I would have been okay with a slower move into the discovering what the galaxy threatening thing was this season.
Yeah. Well,
we didn't need it in the, you know, last 10 minutes of the first episode. But you know what? I like Discovery. I like this crew. I am sure come around to what they have planned.
Indeed. All right. Well, you have any other final thoughts on this one?
You know what? I really enjoy. We have talked about weird angles before that Discovery used, but the way they used those effects to when they were in the space station that was, you know, had its gravity busted, and the way they played with the angles and had the sparks moving all around so that it actually really emphasized how broken things were on the station in a very positive way. And I enjoyed it immensely.
And they were standing on the ceiling.
They were standing on the ceiling. It was like fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Well, that will do it for our discussion of season 4, episode 1, Kobayashi Maru. We'll be back soon with a discussion of the next episode. But before we go, Beth, can you remind the listeners where they can find us on the internet?
There, yes, absolutely. We are on Twitter at Warp Trails. We're on Instagram and Facebook as at Warp Trails Pod. And then on the RetroZap Discord server, we have our own room, the Warp Trails room, and come and hang out and discuss Star Trek with us. You know, what do you think of the new uniforms?
Yeah, we just put new images of our collection of Star Trek wine. Just got delivered today.
What do you think of Star Trek wine?
Yeah. It's delicious. I can tell you that much. All right. Well, we'd also like to remind you that our show is part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. You can head over to RetroZap.com for other great podcasts covering everything from collecting, video games, superheroes, Star Wars, and a whole lot more. But with that, all that's left to do is to thank you all for joining us. Live long and prosper. We'll talk to you next time.
Take care, y'all.